three-fourths human with Kent. And Sluggo. And AI.
Hey, party people. It is episode 157.
Seven.
Ding, ding, ding.
Lucky
Welcome.
Number.
I'm Kevin Ryder. That is Sluggo.
Peace.
That is Kat Corbett. And this is Cornelius, who's going to introduce us to our guest today, Noodles from The Offspring.
And the Rhythmic Gymnastics debacle.
Which is he's on the last episode. He's still talking about the Chinese robot Olympics.
Hey, Corny, introduce us to Noodles from The Offspring.
Right. So you've got Noodles from The Offspring, but I'm still talking about the Chinese robot Olympics.
Let it go.
Right, we'd like you to stop that.
Let it go, bud.
We'd like you to stop that and introduce Noodles from The Offspring for this episode.
Okay. So we've got Noodles from The Offspring here today. And
wow. Brilliant.
Give us
wow,
a proper
amazing
introduction, you lazy bastard.
Tell us about him. What do you know about Noodles from The Offspring? Come on, man.
All right, here we go. So, we've got a bona fide legend. A man who's turned a high school teacher into a 40 million album punk rock institution. Ooh. He's helped sculpt the sound of modern punk for three decades. And he's a curious bloke as well. So this should be a proper entertaining detour.
Did he say I was a high school teacher, though?
He did. Yeah.
Yeah
that's incorrect. I was an elementary school custodian, yes. Head custodian, to be fair.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Are you actually in the custodian's office right now? That's what it looks like behind you.
I know, right? My that office was even more worse than this, yeah.
Some of my favorite as artists were custodians, Noodles, including yourself, so.
What?
Oh, Jim Carrey?
Paul Westerberg? I mean, just.
Oh, really? I didn't know that about him.
Yeah. I mean, just go through the list. Yeah.
So you're actually here in home, you said, but you just got back from where? Kazakhstan? Is that right?
We just played Kazakhstan for the very first time. Yeah.
Insane.
First time really in Central Asia there. Well, I don't know. We played Russia north of there a number of years ago. I guess that technically counts as Central Asia as well. Interesting country. You know, we had never been. We didn't know what to expect. But it was great. It was a great show. The crowd went off. You could tell there was a little bit of lag with the language barrier.
Sure.
They didn't entirely understand what we were saying, but they left appropriately and cheered appropriately, so it felt good. Yeah.
Did they have a translation band that was right next to you, and they would just play the same song along with you in their language?
Yeah, right. No, they should.
No.
I think they probably, they had all their phones out, so it might have been the translation app on their phones that they had going. I've never seen, honestly, never seen so many phones up, you know, than I have in Kazakhstan.
Hmm.
And it's getting more and more everywhere around the world, you know, but that's how you know if you're really, you know, firing on all cylinders and doing a good show, it's phones. Everyone's holding their phones up. But I've never
really?
Seen it quite like this.
So that's a good sign to you because it always seems annoying to me.
It's,
well, it is.
it's something you have to get used to. You know, I think it's worse when I'm at a show and I'm watching a band and somebody
yes.
holds their phone up in front
yeah.
of me. That's way
yeah.
worse
yes.
than,
yeah.
you know, when I'm on stage and somebody holds up a phone to.
Right.
I mean, how many, you know, I understand, you know, I don't know, like I'll try to get my favorite solo, you know, guitar solo or whatever, you know, but then the rest of the song, I watch it. I'm not going to listen to this whole, watch a video of the whole song.
Right.
Who
yeah.
watches all the videos that
no
they take?
One.
Nobody.
No you know, one.
Nobody has
no.
the time. Yeah,
one
there's
person.
No way.
Yeah.
And all the, there's the people that bug me are the people who are recording, not pictures, but video, and aren't even paying attention like where the video's pointed. They're
right.
dancing, they're talking,
yeah, yeah.
they're, you know, filming their
they're
neighbors.
They're jumping up like, and down while
yes.
filming. You're like,
yeah. what are you doing?
I try to, you know, when people are up front and they're filming, I try to, you know, wave, you know, and give them some time. And
nice.
There was these two girls, you know, young girls in front, right in front, and they had their phones up. And so I'm like waving at their phone and I realize they're not filming me. They're here. It's a festival, and they're here for young blood or whoever right after us.
Right.
young fans. So they couldn't care less about this old dude playing punk rock on stage.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm sure, you know, when bands go to countries that don't have heavy touring, like, say, the States, like, they must have been so flipped out, though, to have you guys visit. I know the appreciation factor is really high.
100%. And you know what? I've never been approached by more fans anywhere in the world, any city in the world. The city was called Almaty, and it was kind of like in the, I guess, south middle of the country, maybe a little bit towards the eastern side. A lot of Russian fans, they're on vacation, and then Kazakh fans as well. My son was with me, and we're just walking around the town, just kind of getting a feel for it. And it was just fan after fan after fan coming up, and he was getting like perturbed by it.
Dad,
yeah, pretty funny. You know, first he was offering to take pictures, and after a while, he's just like, "Yeah, you're on your own."
Dad, put on a baseball hat. That hair is giving us away.
We did, and it didn't help. You know, but the hair is the dead giveaway for sure. Yeah. We'd have people. We're sitting like upstairs in an outdoor cafe, and people walking by, and they would see the hair, and all of a sudden they're on their phone Googling to make sure you just see it happening.
Right.
And it was like one after the other after the other. There was like six people when, you know, this hour that we sat at this outdoor cafe. It was pretty nuts. So.
Why do you think that country, that city was noticeably more interested in you than most?
I don't know if it was that it's so unusual to have somebody from, you know, a traveling band, you know, especially a Western band, come to their city, that they had to come up and say something. Maybe they have less, like, if I'm in New York City, you know, I've seen, you know, Chris Rock walk by a pizza place and you just go, oh, hey, that was Chris Rock. Cool. You know, right. You know, big stars. You don't go chasing after them. But I don't know. Maybe it's also, I don't know, a little bit of a cultural thing. You know, they had no problem coming up and, wow. You know,
did you ever see the series with Ewan McGregor and Charlie Borman, Long Way Round,
favorite
where they get on
story.
Their...
No.
Yeah. Oh, you would dig
so
it, I think.
So good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Basically, they got on their motorcycles and have ridden around the world, and Kazakhstan was one of the most interesting places they visited. So
wow.
The people were so cool, and it was just so remote and so different, and, you know, so, yeah.
The people were super warm and super thankful, you know, that I spent time, and they didn't, you know, they would get the picture, shake my hand, and then they would, you know, go about their day, let me go about mine.
They didn't toss you up in the air in a square someplace.
Yeah.
Is there a statue with your like of you now no. in the square somewhere?
Yeah, in the middle of the Green Bazaar. Yeah, yeah. No, I hope not.
Is that where Borat is from?
They do not like Borat. I tried really hard to leave my Borat voice at home. But of course, me and my son walk out of the airport and I'm looking around and the first thing I say is, very nice. Yeah. I tried to just not to let the drivers hear. Right. They don't like Borat much in Kazakhstan. For the most part, Almaty was a very modern city. You know, there was some Soviet era, you know, like the brutalist architecture, which is kind of cool in a way. Yeah, totally. Yeah. And there was tons of construction happening. The city's kind of booming. You can see it's really building up. And and so it was pretty cool. It's like 2.4 million people in the city there.
Wow.
So,
wow.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
So you've been out doing the punk stuff, and I love how that came about.
Yeah.
Dude, it's like I was counting your set list. It's at least like 20 songs. I mean, they're all short, right? But what a lot of energy.
Yeah. I don't think we've ever played that many songs in a set list ever. I think we were at 27, 28 songs at those shows.
Damn.
But like you said, you know, a lot of them are, you know, 2 minutes and 30 seconds.
Right.
So it goes by really quick, but it's fast and furious. It's taxing when you're playing. And Dexter's voice, I mean, he's singing rapid fire throughout all those 2.5 minutes. It takes a toll on his voice for sure.
I like how the backstory of how it came about, why you guys went out and did it. You should tell everyone, because I think a lot of bands don't pay enough attention like you guys did with this. to make this happen?
I don't know what the backstory you heard was.
You tell it, Sluggo.
I was reading one, I guess one of the posts was like saying that everybody was saying, hey, just play the punk stuff. Just play the old loud stuff, the deep stuff. And
yeah, I mean, we get that all the time for sure. And really, it was the Keep Them Separated guy. His name's Jason McLean. We call him Blackball because back before anyone knew who we were, when we were still playing punk clubs and backyards, we played his backyard one time.
Oh, nice.
He would scream and yell, play Blackball, play Blackball, which is a song on our first record. It was actually our first single too.
Wow.
And we were afraid of this guy. He was so loud and obnoxious. We were like, man, either he's going to either kick our ass or we're going to make friends with him. And
right.
So we made friends with him and we've been friends with him ever since. So he runs a Facebook page dedicated to the Offspring, him and another super fan. And Blackball's just the funniest guy. He's a little bit extra when you're hanging out with him. He loves to drink beer and just say the wrongest things, but he's got a huge, huge heart. He's really funny, really smart. And he kind of kept egging us on. And finally we go, all right, we'll do it. And we flew him out and flew a bunch of fans out actually. So, and a bunch of fans flew their own accord. And yeah, it was
That's
a lot of
cool.
fun, man. And the next one coming up in Jersey is also just a punk stuff show. So
I love that you have, you know, you're talking about how fast the songs are and the set. I mean, it's definitely like the Ramones set list, right? Because every song's like under 2 minutes. And I see that you finally put down, I Want to Be Sedated. You recorded it finally.
Yeah. I think we actually did it once for
98,
a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did it for Idle Hands, the movie Idle Hands, yeah. And we went and we redid it recently. We've been playing it. We were doing Blitzkrieg Bop for a while, and then we thought we should switch that out with something, so we did I Want to Be Sedated. We've been playing that. It's a lot of fun.
I played it yesterday afternoon on the air, and I don't know if this is sacrilege, but I like your version better.
I mean, look, we have Noodles here,
praise.
And I love
That's
you, Noodles.
No, I do.
I'm with Kat on this one. I'm with Kat. Yeah,
100%. Joey Ramone is rolling around in his leather jacket right now.
Most
like...
people disagree, but I like yours better.
Yeah. Well, all the Ramones are heroes, especially Joey. I think he overcame so much in his life, and was just a rock star, like a rock god. He really was. So,
as long as we're throwing those out, though, I'll say that I like your version of Smash It Up better than The Damned, which is also possibly heresy.
Yeah, I might go with that one. I might. I like your version a lot.
Again, I can't agree with that. Yeah, I mean, if it wasn't for the Damned were one of the first first really like punk rock bands to ever get played like on the radio. They really kind of broke doors. I'm a huge Damned fan.
Sure.
But Ramones even more so.
So speaking of the radio and punk on the radio, you grew up in Garden Grove here in Los Angeles, yeah?
Yep, in Orange County, just south of LA, yep.
So you were listening to K-Rock back in the day? What, do you remember the first
100%,
sort of punk music? Yeah.
100%. That's where I first heard the Ramones. I think I first heard the Buzzcocks, Something's Gone Wrong Again, know, on K-Rock. Oh, yeah.
Great song. Yeah.
And how about Jed the Fish? What do you have for us about Jed?
Oh,
we talk
God.
About him a lot here.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, what a character. He actually broke us. I mean, he played us. It was Come Out and Play was Jed the Fish's catch of the day. But I mean, I just that laugh, that hysterical, maniacal laugh that he had was just great. He always played the coolest, kind of edgiest stuff. He had a great sense of humor. I got to know him a little bit from doing interviews and stuff with him. One of the last interviews we did with him, I found out he had a big affinity for fireworks. It was right before 4th of July. He was asking us, what are we going to do for 4th of July? And he kind of had a whole fireworks display all set up. I had no idea about that until.
Dude, this is, I don't know how much this has been out there.
It's infectious.
It is infectious.
I don't know how much people have talked about this or how much it's gotten out, but I will now, I think it's been long enough that it should be known that Jed's affinity for fireworks went right up to the end. They blew up his ashes in fireworks.
Did they really? Awesome.
Sent it up into the sky and just blew it up.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Sorry, Pasadena.
As it should be.
Yeah, exactly.
You're welcome, Pasadena.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He went to Vegas for some demolition event. Like one time he told me, I was like, what? And then he started talking about explosives. And he was like, Kat, you do know that Cremora is flammable. And I'm like, what?
Oh,
he was like, we're putting on a long song. So I don't know what we put on K-Rock. I was like doing my show or his show or whatever. And he's like, come with me. And we go to the K-Rock kitchen and he pours a bunch of Cremora on the counter and then lights it on fire. And it like exploded in the kitchen while we were doing
fantastic.
Our shows.
Fantastic. Yep.
Yeah. All us pyros know about that. Yeah. For sure.
Noodles, is it true that you didn't know how to play the guitar when you started the band at all?
No, I actually, when I joined the band, I'd been playing
Clowns of Death
the longest. Clowns of Death. That's right. Exactly. Yeah. In fact, the first time Dexter and I ever played, the first time Dexter ever played with a full band was Clowns of Death in my parents' living room. That was in 1984. That was the first time we ever played music together. Nice. With
were they thrilled? Noodles.
Yeah, your parents.
Dexter was actually stoked. He said that was everything, kind of getting the full sound of a band. It really made an impression on him. Yeah, and that drummer at the time was James. It was our first drummer, and it was Clowns of Death. Then it was Manic Subsidal was the band that Dexter started with some friends, and Dexter didn't. He didn't even have a guitar. Didn't play. Nobody did. Our bass player at the time, Greg, didn't have a bass, so they just they asked their parents for either Christmas money or for instruments for Christmas.
How do you make a band before you have instruments?
They were going to see, I think it was Social Distortion. They went to go see play, and they couldn't get in. I don't know if the cops shut them down and sent them home or what, but they couldn't get into the show. They were all bummed, so they went. They went to somebody's house whose parents were gone and were drinking beer and went, you know what? We should start our own band. And they all agreed. But only Greg and Dexter were part of that. Two other friends were part of that. They never learned instruments or got anything. So then Dexter and Greg were learning. Dexter stole James, who was the drummer in Clowns of Death, and we kind of worked out we were going to play in both bands, and then eventually I joined Manic Subsidal, which would become The Offspring.
And I hear that there was a point in time where you were like, this is just so hard to get off the ground, you were close to maybe just moving on to something else. Is that true? What do you think your life would have been like had you not?
It wasn't the band. I never thought the band was going to get off the ground. The band was a hobby, you know?
Right.
I mean, it wasn't a career move. But I was just, I was a janitor, you know, and I was going to school part-time off and on. And I thought about, like, what am I going to do? I thought about joining the Coast Guard, which with my eyesight at the time, they never would have let me join my eyesight. It was so bad. It's still not great.
What were you studying in school?
Just general ed. You know, I thought maybe I would go into teaching, actually.
You know, Kevin Ryder was a teacher for a little while here.
I was a substitute teacher for a little bit.
It still blows minds.
Can you imagine him as your sub teacher? Can you imagine he comes in and...
No.
How dare you all? I was a great substitute teacher. I would come into the class and I would identify the troublemakers because I was one of them and kick them out, send them to the principal's office, and then we had a great time.
I'm surprised you didn't make friends with the troublemakers.
I'm not saying
I didn't.
So it could be in bands now, probably. Exactly.
Yeah.
Was there a point, Noodles, where you were old enough to buy the other guy's beer?
See, that was part of it too. We joke a lot about that, but yeah, I was 22, and the other guys were, I think Greg was 20 at the time. Dexter was 19, and so yeah, I was the one buying. I was contributing to the delinquency of minors for sure, but I was old enough to buy beer. So yeah, I would, you know, we'd get a couple cases of beer, go to Greg's house, play music, you know, until the cops came to tell us to shut it down.
Right.
There was an elderly woman who lived next door to Greg, and the cops would always come 10:30, 11 o'clock, you know. Then we just stay up drinking beer.
Nice.
Who bought you beer when you were underage, Noodles?
Not a lot of people. I didn't.
Rude.
That's why I didn't start playing music until I didn't start playing music until later, you know.
Okay, gotcha. All right.
I got mine at Rocky Horror. You should have joined us. They were very happy to buy us all
sorts
of
booze. To love going to the Rocky Horror Picture Show, but I was sober the whole time, you know.
Did you
get a
new art?
No, there was the Balboa Theater on Balboa Island, and then there was one in Long Beach, just on the other side of the border between Seal Beach and Long Beach. There's a movie theater there that would do midnight showings.
So said Jed played Come Out and Play the first time on Catch of the Day. Did you know that that was coming up? And what was it like to hear your song on K-Rock the first time?
We did know. So we were all tuning in and listening, and we got on the phones right away and started calling. And I had my mom call.
Good. Nice. And, perfect. Brilliant.
Yeah, we all called right away. And then at some point we stopped calling, and it was still getting calls. And then we were playing a show in Alaska. We were playing an award ceremony for this King of the Hill contest, which is a big snowboarding contest in Valdez, wow, Alaska. And our friends were telling us, you don't understand, you're getting played on Furious 5 at 9 now. You know, every night, your song's going crazy. And that was, we were actually there when the record came out, Smash came out. You know, I was still a janitor at that point. I went back to work for another month after that, and then took a leave of absence for 3 years. I didn't even quit. I took a leave of absence.
Why didn't you quit?
I didn't trust that this was going to work out. I'm still not sure, wow, Kevin.
That was your plan, B.
I think that's wise, really. I don't trust radio myself. Or
Where'd
whatever,
that guy
whatever.
Go? I don't know. He's been gone for 15 years.
Yeah, right.
That must have been so crazy that you grew up listening to K-Rock, and then this is happening, and then like just the wave of things and your mom and like your family and your friends and just wild. And, you know, I was on the other side because I grew up on East Coast. And so we were getting bits and pieces of West Coast music like Red Hots and Jane's Addiction and stuff like that. But I remember 1,000% when you guys came over with Rancid, because that was the tour like everything just exploded. And I saw that show at Axis in Boston on Lansdowne Street. I'll never forget it.
Wow. Fall of 94. Yeah.
And it was one of those things where we're like, what is going on the West Coast? Because we have a lot of great music in Boston, but like that was like this other thing that was coming over, and it was so impressive. It was great.
Well, that's cool. Thank you. Yeah, that was a fun tour going out with Rancid. We played, and it was fall of 94, and I dressed up as Lars and he dressed up as me for Halloween. And
nice.
And we had a lot of fun with those guys. Yeah.
I love it.
I have to admit something. I think it was 1990 when we first started at K-Rock, and we had a singles party, and it was a prom theme. And they came to us and they said, hey, there's this band, The Offspring. Do you want to have them play at your party? And we were like, no, I don't think so. We didn't know anything about you, of course. I don't think so. It's a prom. We should have a DJ. That just makes more sense. And I just have never, every time I play your songs, I go, oh, right. That's the family set.
We did finally get around to playing the prom. It would have probably been 95, 96. I think it was between Smash and Ixnay. And we played with Weezer at Magic Mountain. And we played Babe by Styx because that was a big prom song.
That's awesome.
We were playing. And
holy
we wore
shit.
Like we had like these pastel tuxedos that we rented for the prom show. Yeah, it was really silly. We had a
Someone
lot of fun.
Someone has to
with
have
that.
Photos from that session. Come on, people.
I know.
I want to see those pictures.
You know, this was cell phones, you know, were around, but still not widespread at that point, right?
Oh, so, you don't hear the phrase, like, hey, did anyone bring a camera anymore? And that's what you used to
hear. Right.
No,
yeah.
But to see the Offspring in pastel suits, like, come on now. That's.
Yeah. I wish we had some of that stuff. Yeah.
Right.
Or maybe I don't. I'm not sure. Maybe I don't.
Yeah, maybe. Every band has to start someplace. And do you have any stories of really terrible gigs where you outnumber the fans
tons of those where it was just us and the other bands and their girlfriends, right? You know, we didn't even have girlfriends at the time. There was the worst thing we ever did, although we made gas money to get back home, which was nice, was we played a co-op in Berkeley, you know, just a bunch of like a frat, you know, or not, but it was co-ed co-op, and we played the dinner hour, and we're in this corner of this cafeteria rocking out, and you just hear people getting their food, coming down, sitting down, eating a couple of bites of their food, and then leaving during our set, and we're just rocking out, and it was all college kids, you know, kind of hippie, you know, co-op, you know, forward-thinking college kids who didn't give a rat's ass about our music, that's for sure. So that was one of the most, just soul-sucking gigs we've ever done.
Sounds like Flight of the Conchords.
I think it would make me angry if somebody sat down right in front of me and then
was having dinner.
As soon as they were done, just got up and left.
Seriously.
Yeah, yeah.
I would go, hey, dude, sit back down. We still have some more songs.
Yeah, it was a tough gig. And then we played two shows that now we didn't make any money at the second show, but we played on a flatbed truck out in the middle of somewhere in the middle of Oakland.
Wow.
And that was actually a pretty fun show. There's, you know, just a bunch of punks. And remember this band came out and they did C is for Cookie, and the guy had like a Cookie Monster head and sang nice. Like that. And it was great. Yeah.
He like, wow, the acid is kicking in.
Yeah. I love hearing these stories though. And I think they're important for other like new artists to hear that, because you know, a lot of times the new ones forget, like they think you just came out of the box. Awesome. And they don't even think you had to struggle during any of these embarrassing things at all. And you stuck it out. So I love it.
Yeah. Well, now it's all about going viral, right? It's all about, you know, putting a song together, making a video, you know, doing something silly in that video that goes viral, or something cool in that video that goes viral.
Right.
So when Kevin and I were at KLOS, you did a show for us, an hour long called Punk Evolution, where you basically were playing the songs that kind of helped move towards punk before it actually became
awesome.
A thing at
I
all.
Love that.
Yeah. And I got to say, and I've told everyone this, if you ever talk to anyone, they will say that I was so amazed at how good you were at being a dumbass DJ. You were perfect at it. I didn't have to give you notes. I didn't have to say, hey, you know, maybe don't say this, say that. You just sent me the fucking tracks and they were perfection. And like, put them right on the air.
I was so annoyed by that because I thought, I'm a specialist. I do something on, and Noodles just comes in and it's perfect. And you just go, come on, man.
Oh my God. I had Noodles and Dexter on my SiriusXM show and they played live, but they took calls. And I thought the same thing. I'm like, why isn't Noodles on the air, like have a show.
Yes.
And like,
you guys are being too kind, way too kind. I do like it. I prefer it when it's, you know, Dexter and I, because then I feel like I have a partner and it's, you know, not just on me. And it is, we have a very relaxed banter, you know, especially on radio, but even now live, it's just really funny. And the funnest thing for each of us is to make the other one laugh, you know, in front of the audience. Right. So just try to throw things that are just for the benefit of, you know, it's just for the benefit of Dexter. He's throwing out things that are just for my benefit to make me laugh.
Would you ever want to do that with him maybe as a show at some point?
I would love to. He would never.
Really?
He would
never. Is it beneath his PhD to do that, Noodles?
Yeah. He loves having good, you know, in-depth conversations. But he could never be a radio DJ. I think it would just kind of drive him crazy. Yeah. We did do a podcast, he and I, and I really enjoyed that. We would have, you know, who do we have? We had Rob Trujillo. We had Fletcher from Pennywise.
Oh, nice.
We had Bob Rock, our producer, you know, some friends and people. We had Adrian from No Doubt in on it. And it was a lot of fun and I enjoyed it. And I like playing the part of a, you know, I know this guy, he's a friend of mine, but I've always wanted to ask him this question or that question.
Right,
dig deep into things. And you know, it's a joy to be able to do that and also finally get answers for all these questions that I have. Getting Dexter to talk about himself or his life is really, it's like pulling teeth. He's very, I'm the heart on my sleeve kind of guy, and he's the cards close to the vest kind of guy.
Right.
He doesn't like talking about himself or his, you know, really thoughts or ideas. He hates talking about thought processes, about lyrics. You know, he just thinks the lyrics should just kind of speak for themselves, and you know, let's not get too deep into that, you know. And he certainly doesn't want anyone looking at the lyrics and going, now is this autobiographical, you know?
Right, of course.
He hates that stuff, yeah.
I got to tell you, as interviewers, we know that Dexter doesn't like that kind of stuff, and we know that you'll answer pretty much anything. And so you prepare that way just because that's who he is. That's who you are.
Yeah.
Did you ever get a chance to play Pacifica High School in Garden Grove where you went? Or
We did once. And I was the janitor actually at the time.
Oh, wow, that's awesome.
Dexter and James were seniors at the time, maybe, or no, they just graduated, so they wouldn't have been. Nobody was a student there, but we played a Battle of the Bands, And the best part of that show was we did a song called Beheaded, and our bass player's mom brought home a skeleton. She worked at the VA hospital, and they were throwing out a skeleton. Nice. So she brought home a skeleton. You know, yeah, you guys might like this. Sure. So our drummer played Bad Habit with the femurs.
Yes.
But they disintegrated on the song Bad Habit. But at the end of the song, he's just kind of pounding on the drums. It was awful sounding. But yeah, that by the way, that drummer now, he's a gynecological oncologist up in the Bay Area. He works out of Los Gatos, California, and he's saving lives. He's one of the most genius guys I've ever met.
Wow. Is that something that he hides? That he was using femurs to play drums at one point?
I don't know if he wants that story out. Yeah.
Right.
he plays in a band called Bunko, and they're kind of Residence meets Devo, you know, meets just crazy, you know, neuroscientists. A lot of shtick, a lot of tongue-in-cheek humor, and just crazy, weird math rock.
What is with the smarty pants in your band? Like, what is that?
I don't know.
You're all like brainiacs. It's so weird.
Oh, man, when it was James and Dexter together, it was intimidating. Yeah, you know.
You just keep your mouth shut and watch them talk?
Mom, go play guitar. Yeah, exactly. You know, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Career has had to be, I always call my career cartoon. Career because things happen so fast and weird things that don't normally happen to people happen at a rate that's crazy. Do you have any huge memories of like the crazy, what am I doing here moments?
I mean, moments of achievement that I just never thought we would ever achieve, you know? The first time we headlined Verizon Amphitheater, you know, we did two nights back to back and headlined. Yeah. And I remember just walking back with my wife after the show, walking back to the car and looking up at the empty stands, you know, an hour, 2 hours after we played and went, what just happened?
Wow.
What just happened? You know,
fine.
I remember playing the Weenie Roast for the first time. I was still a janitor in 1994.
Really?
You know?
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
What?
Wow. Yeah. I went back to work as a you know, head custodian on Monday.
So, okay, wait. Yeah. So you're saying after you played the K-Rock Weenie Roast, you were still a custodian, a janitor, and you went back to work the following Monday?
Yep. Maybe Tuesday. But
that is an emotional roller coaster.
No kidding.
Yeah, seriously. No kidding.
I mean,
yeah, I promised my boss that I wouldn't quit until the end of the school year. So my last day was actually the day of the OJ Bronco chase.
Oh, wow. Yeah, okay. That's craziness right there.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You know, yeah. Yeah. But yeah, so I finished out the school year and boy, I was just fried, just frazzled. Sure. My boss did let me take the odd Friday off and the odd Monday off. And we were going out and doing weekends and stuff, you know?
Well, so, I mean, as a result, would you have any sort of advice for bands? Like some guy is still doing that, but him and his band are getting together on the weekend and they send in their, you know, demo to a station or whatever. What would your advice be for those kind of people? Still
quit earlier. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean it's a funny story, but yeah, I was so burnt out by the time. God.
But it's very cool of you to keep your word. That's very
Yeah,
good.
I can't imagine you wouldn't go into him and say, "Look, I really meant that, but I'm dying here." So,
it's the right thing to do, man. That's cool that you did. That's very cool.
My boss was a woman and she couldn't have been cooler about it. So, we worked everything out together. It was nice. Yeah.
Noodles, I have this image in my head of like you're like the janitor in Breakfast Club, or is that just like because he was such a wise ass to the kids?
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
I used to work Saturday schools, and I can't tell you, I would listen to music. I had a, you know, it was just a big tape recorder, and I would listen to music, and I always wanted to get the Simple Minds song when they were leaving.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, right. And just stand there leaning on the bucket as the kids were filing out. You know, I had Carl the custodian's monologue down. What, you think I'm some worthless serf, some peasant, some peon? Let me tell you something. I go through your lockers. I read your notes. I listen to your conversations. I am the eyes and ears of this institution. Yeah, I used to have it down verbatim. I don't. That's close, but yeah.
You just made my day.
Yeah.
Did any kids recognize you while you were being a custodian and go, "What are you? Aren't you? I just saw you on MTV."
It literally happened to me. I was sweeping up, leaves in the back picnic area outside the office, and a high school kid. There was a high school bus stop right in the front, and this kid's walking across the school grounds to get to the bus stop, and she goes, "What are you doing?" She goes, "I literally just saw you on TV this morning while I was getting ready. What are you doing here?" And I was a couple of weeks away from.
What did you say? What was your answer to that? Because that is a really interesting question.
I said, I promised I'd stick around. I go, I won't be here much longer. Don't worry.
Good work ethic. So, I like that you stuck it out and you didn't leave people high and dry. That says a lot about you. I love that.
Yeah, I wouldn't have.
Thank you. Yeah. I wish I should have quit earlier.
No way.
Yeah. OG was the last straw. Yeah.
Well, Noodles, you are the greatest, and we're so happy that you came on with us. We really appreciate that you took the time.
Big time.
Oh, man, the pleasure's all mine, you guys. And it's great to talk to all three of you all at once.
We love this. We have fun.
Thanks so much. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you, Corny.
Cornelius, can you give us a complete recap of this episode with specific things that we talked about and thank people for listening and watching?
Use the whole beautiful mess. Episode 157 was a proper belter. Thanks for listening and watching, folks. We had Noodles from The Offspring.
What happened to your accent, Corny?
Yeah, where's the accent, Corny?
Why can't you keep an accent and do a recap at the same time? You're a computer.
Mancunian accent. Fuck. How hard is it? Come on now.
Hi. Fine. Here it is. So, Noodles joined us, and within half a minute, Kevin had him wrongly promoted from elementary school head custodian to high school.
It's not the proper accent.
Which is...
Noodles, would you like a free robot? You can have
a
robot.
Yes, or a free phone with purchase. Yeah. Here we go.
I still love the idea you guys brought up on our Risa show to have it Rodney Bingenheimer's voice. I think that would just be incredible. Just for one episode. Just for one.
No,
you have to do it.
It's in my dream.
Genius. Genius.
Corny, give us a full recap. Go.
Here we go. Right then, here's the whole beautiful mess. Episode 157 was a proper belter. Thanks for tuning in. We had Noodles from The Offspring with us, and immediately Kevin promoted him from elementary school custodian to high school teacher. Classic. Noodles said it straight. Janitor from 87 to 95, and he owned it. Then we just gushed about Smash like the ageless marvel it is. That record's still indestructible. Then Noodles talked about his favorite records to make. Smash for the scrappy "We Might Never Get This Chance Again" spirit, and Supercharged because it's just a great record. Self-produced, no outside voice, proper band zen. We ribbed each other about AI songs and robot DJs, and Noodles was diplomatic, curious-minded, but not exactly queuing it up on his playlist. Favorite part? Sharknado chat. Noodles loving campy disaster films, name-dropping Sharknado, and Mars Attacks. We also hit terrible gigs like playing the dinner hour in a co-op cafeteria while students actively fled. We've all played some stinkers.
Corny's played some stinkers.
Right. And one American dollar cat ran a list of one-hit wonders with multiple albums. Thomas the Tank Engine Dance remix at number 2. Come on. Who needs dignity? What? Closing bit, Noodles recalled finishing janitor work the day of the OJ Bronco chase. It's a tidy little full circle. I'm somehow still alive. Gratitude all around for surviving and for now and what you had for breakfast. And thanks for watching and listening.
It sounds like Corny had gummies for breakfast or something.
How much of
like
that was wrong? 90%?
About?
At least. Yeah. He threw Kevin under the bus. It was Corny that said I was a high school teacher, not Kevin. Come on.
You're a cop. Well, first, that week, me, not Kevin, who turned Noodles into a high school teacher. Classic.
Thank you for correcting. Classic corny.
Right. Oh, corny.
Uno, two, tres,
three-fourths human with
Kevin Cat
and Slugo
and AI.